Junko Furuta had a bright future ahead of her. She was pretty, she was bright, and had everything going for her. That was until it was taken away from her in one of the worst cases of torture and murder known to anybody. This is the case of Junko Furuta. Welcome to Enter the Dark. Hello and welcome to Enter the Dark. I am Jan from Film Daddy. With me as always, and actually with me this time, is Les from Tales from the Hangman. Hi, Les.
Right, Jan.
We're back together.
Back together, but socially distancing.
Yes, of course. We are able to come back to his house because we're able to eat together now.
Yes, we're eating.
We're eating knowledge.
Eating knowledge.
That's what
we're a bubble.
We are. I'm his support bubble, we can also have.
Yeah. Bubbles and eating.
But guys, a quick thank you to everybody. On the last video, we said, we've almost got 250 subscribers. You guys have smashed that. And we're over 400. I think we're about 440 now.
446, I believe.
Something like that. But we said we were going to make a video when we got to 250, but we haven't had time and stuff. So we will make a video and just not put it for any sort of number. Just a thank you video for you all. Big shout out to Larkspur BM, who commented on our Moore's murder case, because she found us as her birthday is the same day as Myra Hindley's and her boyfriend's is the same day as Ian Brady's.
Wow.
That is just weird coincidence. And I'm sure you're nice people and won't do anything wrong, so... But guys, thank you for all your comments you've been putting on the videos and everything there. We love talking to you, getting in touch. So all the social links are down below. And also email us at enterthedarkpodcast@gmail.com. If you've got any suggestions or anything you just want to talk, we will reply to you. We have to do this at the start of this. Now we have to give a warning. This case does involve torture, murder, sexual abuse, and it is quite graphic. We don't hold back any of the details. So if you are affected by that, then probably not the video for you. It's probably up there with the Sylvia Likens case.
Oh, I'd say
how
so.
Shocking it is.
Yeah.
This is the case of Junko Furuta. So, Junko Furuta was a popular student at Yashio Minami High School. She was pretty, she was bright, and got good grades in her classes in Misato, Japan. Unlike her classmates, she didn't drink, smoke, or use drugs. She was quite popular at school and seemingly had a bright future ahead of her. Some of the other students took her behaviour personally, though, as if refusal to partake in these activities was Furuta's way of declaring that she was better than them. The most significant among these peers was Hiroshi Miyano. Now, he was known to be affiliated with the local Yakuza, and that outstanding knowledge afforded the 18-year-old a suit of societal armour. That's right, isn't it? Societal, is that a word?
Societal armour.
Societal, that's what the word I'm looking for. Yeah, so this kid is in the Yakuza, so...
He's a bad lad, then.
Yeah. Even at such a young age, other students and members of the community were afraid of what Miyano might have been capable of. And they were right to be afraid. He would roam the streets at night finding women who were easy prey and would rob and rape them with some of his friends. Now, Miyano had developed a crush on Furuta and was enraged when she turned him down, explaining that she wasn't ready for a relationship at that time. Nobody had ever dared say no to him and reject him. Most were scared of his links to the Yakuza and would follow his requests obediently. So on November the 25th, 1988... Miyano and another student by the name of Nobuharu Minato were prowling the evening streets. They planned to rob and rape whatever local women they could find. Around 8:30 p.m. they spotted Furuta. She was riding her bicycle on a path home from her part-time job she tended after school. Still angry about spurning his advances, Miyano quickly came up with a plan. Now, following orders, Minato intercepted the path of Furuta's bike and kicked her to the ground and ran away. Hiroshi Miyano took this opportunity to pose as a knight in shining armour. He helped her to her feet and offered to walk her home. Miyano instead brought Junko Furuta into an old warehouse. explained his connections to the Yakuza and threatened to kill her and her family if she didn't follow his orders. It was here that she was raped for the first time. Minato then took her to a hotel where he raped her again. So this guy, you can see already, he's sort of like the head of a little gang that they've got there.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the Yakuza ties, you know, I'd be scared.
Did he definitely have Yakuza ties?
Yeah, yeah, he definitely had ties to the Yakuza.
So he wasn't, like, acting? You know, like, we've grown up with kids who are like, my dad's in the mafia.
Yeah, but no, he actually did have ties to the Yakuza. So, while they were in that hotel, Miyano then called his friends, Nobuharu Minato, Joe Agure, and Yoshushi Watanabe, who was, as a group, had a history of gang rape, and he rang up to brag about his despicable accomplishment. Agure suggested that Hiroshi keep hold of the captured schoolgirl so they could all take turns in raping her. Miyano took Furuta and met the boys at approximately 3 a.m. on November the 26th, then took her to a house in the Aizu district of Adachi, owned by the parents of Nobuharu Minato, where she was raped again by each of the assailants. It was in this house where Junko Furuta was held prisoner for over 40 days, where she'd been repeatedly raped, tortured, and beaten. Furuta's parents contacted the police on November 27th and reported their daughter as missing. Concerned that a police manhunt would find the girl and also get them arrested, the kidnappers forced Junko to call her mother several times. Claiming that she had run away and that she was safe with friends, she told them to call off the police investigation. When Minato's parents would visit the home, Junko Furuta was made to pose as a girlfriend to one of the gang members. But they soon realised that Minato's family would not report them to the police, so they dropped the act and carried on with the disgusting acts.
Why? Why wouldn't they?
Well, the family were afraid of the son and his Yakuza links as well. So they just simply looked the other way. We're getting already the Sylvia Likens vibe of bystander apathy.
Yeah.
Of people just not doing anything. I mean, if you're that scared of your son, though.
Yeah, and that's what's troubling.
Over the next 40 days, the torture and humiliation grew worse. Her captors inviting their friends and affiliates from the Yakuza to enter the home and have their turn raping and beating the young girl. Now, she was subjected to unthinkable, horrendous acts at the hands of her kidnappers. And there was, as well, over 100 other men during her captivity who raped and beat her. According to the trial documents, she was raped over 400 times.
Oh my God.
She was beaten, starved, and forced to eat live cockroaches and drink her own urine. She was hung from the ceiling and used as a punch bag while being beaten with golf clubs, bamboo sticks, and iron rods. Barbells were dropped onto her stomach, and she was forced to masturbate in front of them. They inserted foreign objects into her vagina and anus, including a lit light bulb, fireworks, an iron bar, scissors, and skewers, which left her unable to urinate or defecate properly. Her vagina and clitoris were burnt with cigarettes and lighters, and her eyelids were burnt with hot wax. Her breasts were pierced with needles, and her nipples were torn off with pliers. During the torture, Furuta would slip into unconsciousness, making her torturers dunk her head into buckets of water to revive her and continue their assaults. Now, this is where, obviously we always ask, why didn't anyone do anything? What about the police? In this occasion, twice the police were alerted to Furuta's condition, and twice they failed to intervene.
Again. Why?
Well, the first occasion is when Koichi Ihara, a student in the same year as the kidnappers, was invited over to rape and beat Futura. He claimed he felt as though he was bullied into raping her and he confided in his brother. The brother then told his parents, who then called the police. We talk about ineptitude of police sometimes in cases. This is the worst I've ever heard. The officers dispatched to the Minato home were told by the family that there was no girl inside the house and declined an invitation to search the house to see for themselves. They felt that the invitation alone was enough to prove that there was no girl being held inside. These men later were fired for failing to follow procedure after a huge public backlash. Had they investigated the home, For Rita's excruciating stay may have only lasted 16 days, and she might have recovered from her injuries. That is just fucking stupid.
That's just ineptitude, isn't it?
The second occasion was in December, when Furuta herself managed to get to a phone and call the police. But before she could say a word, she was discovered by Miano, who hung up the phone. The police phoned back and spoke with Miano, who assured them that the emergency call was a mistake. Her actions incensed her kidnappers there, and as a punishment, her legs were doused in lighter fluid and set on fire. A large bottle was forced into her anus, leading to severe bleeding, and coupled with the pain of her freshly burnt legs, she suffered a seizure. During the trial, defendants said they thought she was faking the seizure, so they set fire to her again.
Oh yeah, because that'll cure it.
She survived these injuries, and the rape and the torture continued. Furuta would constantly beg for death, a request that would be denied and would lead the kidnappers to beat and rape her further. As the weather got colder, Furuta was forced to sleep on a balcony in the freezing weather as a further form of punishment. During this time, her wounds were so infected that they began to smell rotten and pus would seep from them. She lost complete control of her bladder and bowel movements, which led to further beatings. She also could not eat or drink without vomiting, which incurred the wrath of her captors. Due to her festering wounds and the stench from them, the kidnappers lost sexual interest in her and led them to kidnap and gang rape a 19-year-old girl. On the 4th of January 1989, Miano arrived at the house angry that he had lost a game of Mahjong. I think it's Mahjong, isn't it?
It's Mahjong.
Mahjong. Anyway, he was angry he'd lost a game and determined to take his frustrations out on Furuta, who at this point was barely alive. The four boys beat her with iron bars and kicked and punched her and placed two short candles onto her eyelids. Forcing her to stand despite being near crippled, they hit her feet with sticks, causing her to fall into a stereo and suffer another seizure. She was bleeding heavily, and added to the pus that was pouring from her wounds, the boys covered their hands with plastic bags and taped them at the wrist so they could continue their assault without getting any of the discharge on their hands. This is what I don't get. I don't get how anyone can be so cruel to somebody, but the premeditation of you've tortured a girl so much and beat her that she has injuries with fucking pus pouring from them, and you carry on beating her by putting things on your hand because you've lost a fucking game.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's, it's like, at what point do you go, like, maybe we've gone too far here, lads? It's grim.
It's fucking disgusting. They repeatedly dropped an iron exercise ball onto her stomach and covered her entire body in lighter fluid and set fire to her. Furuta made feeble attempts to put out the fire, but would fall into unconsciousness. The attack lasted for 2 hours, and later that day, after 40 days of rape, beatings and torture, Junko Furuta succumbed to her injuries and died aged 17. Less than 24 hours after her death, Renato's brother phoned and said that Furuta was not breathing and he feared that she was dead. The boys started to panic as they were afraid they would be going to be charged with murder. Well, what? That's the least of your fucking worries, being charged with murder. It's... I'm just doing the stupid thing of trying to understand their...
Doesn't murder carry the death penalty in Japan, though?
We'll get to that, but... They're worrying that they're going to be charged with murder, and it's like, as soon as somebody sees this body, you're not going to be charged with fucking more than murder.
Yeah.
You know, but they came up with a plan anyway to dispose of her body. They wrapped Furuta up in blankets and placed her in a large travel bag. They put the bag into a 55-gallon oil drum and filled it with wet cement. At 8 p.m, they loaded the oil drum into a van and drove to Koto and dumped it into a cement truck.
I mean, it's creative. Horrible.
It's horrible, but, you know, they've obviously thought, well, they're not going to find a body in cement. But this is where the boys who think they're oh so clever weren't so clever, because the police arrested Hiroshi Miyano and Joe Agura on January the 23rd, 1989, for the gang rape of the woman in December 1988, the one that they raped because they had beaten Junko so badly that she had festering, rancid wounds. So they didn't find her sexually attractive. So they went and raped someone else because they're pieces of shit. On March 29th, officers came to question the boys separately. His female underwear had been found at their addresses. While questioning Miano, one of the officers said that they were aware of a murder that they could link to Miano as a way to trick him into talking about other crimes. Miano assumed that Agura had cracked and told the police about the kidnapping and the abuse of Furuta. Miano confessed to the crime and told them where to find Furuta's body. The police were initially confused as they were talking about a different crime involving a woman and a child that happened before Furuta's kidnapping. Incidentally, that case has never been solved involving the woman and the child. I had a look about it. That could be one for another day. The next day, the police found the aerodrome and managed to identify the body via fingerprints. Both Miano and Agura were arrested for the murder, and the police quickly swooped to arrest Yasushi, Watanabe, Nobuharu Minato, and Minato's brother. When Furuta's body was examined, they found that her brain had shrunk due to the abuse she had received, and even with extreme trauma to her uterus, she was pregnant.
Oh my God.
News of the crime quickly spread, but due to the age of the boys, their identities were sealed by the court. But, and I'm glad somebody did this, journalists from the Shukan Bunshin magazine found out their names and started reporting them, as they felt given the severity of the crime, the accused did not deserve to have their right to anonymity upheld. Good.
You're right, yeah.
Fucking good.
Scumbags.
During the trial, all the details about the abuse came out, leading a spectator in the gallery to faint and Furuta's mother to suffer from a complete mental breakdown that required her to undergo psychiatric treatment. I mean, as a parent, hearing it's bad enough...
Hearing that your child's died or been murdered.
Well, it's bad enough reading what's just happened to this poor 17-year-old girl. You know, it's fucking disgusting.
But to have that read out to court, in court.
And it's the first time you're hearing it as a parent. I'm not surprised that she had a fucking complete breakdown. The boys pleaded guilty to committing a bodily injury that resulted in death, but not murder. So they wouldn't say that they murdered her. They'd said, we beat her so badly and raped her so badly that she died. But it wasn't murder because it wasn't premeditated. Hiroshi Miano was sentenced to 20 years in prison, the second highest sentence after life imprisonment. Nobuharu Minato was sentenced to only 5 to 9 years. Yasushi Watanabe was sentenced to 5 to 7 years. And Joe Agura was sentenced to 8 years. Now,
what?
When I read it, I was fucking angry. I can see Leslie's angry. And I know you guys listening to this are like, what the fuck? What's going on there? When the public found out, they were deemed as too light for the crime they committed. But because the boys were aged 18 and under, there was not much else the judge could do. If they'd been a few years older, they would have received the death penalty. So, once again, it was the age that spared them. At the sentencing, the judge said exceptionally grave and atrocious violence had been inflicted upon the victim and that Junko Furuta had been murdered so brutally at the young age of 17, her soul must be wandering in torment. Miano was denied parole in 2004, but was released in 2009. He was arrested for fraud in 2013, but was released without charge. Apparently, he didn't mind people asking about the Furuta murder, and was totally unrepentant about it. Minato's parents and brother, who weren't charged, lost a civil case that was brought by the Furuta family. And when Minato was released, he moved in with his mother. He was arrested again in 2018 for attempted murder after beating a 32-year-old man with a metal rod and slashing his throat with a knife. Yasushi Watanabe has kept a low profile since being released from prison, and he has not committed any further crimes. After being released, Joe Agura boasted about his part in Furuta's death and also spent his father's savings that were meant as compensation to the Furuta family.
Oh, so classy.
Such a nice guy that he's beat, raped, murdered a girl, encased a body in concrete. He brags about it and the money that his father kept for her family he goes out and spends. It's fucking disgusting. In 2004, he was sentenced to a further 7 years in prison after assaulting Takatoshi Isono and had been released since. Agura's mother, are you ready for this, vandalised the grave of Junko Furuta after she blamed the girl, for ruining her son's life.
What?
So her son has raped, beaten, tortured, sexually assaulted, sexually abused a 17-year-old girl along with 100 other men, and apparently this poor dead girl ruined her son's life. I really hope that bitch dies. What a fucking horrible cunt.
Why would you do that? Also, isn't that like a massive taboo? Like, I mean, just it is, generally, but I think doesn't it have greater cultural
I think it does in Japan, yeah. Japan? Junko Furuta's funeral was held on April the 2nd, 1989, with her high school principal giving her parents her graduation diploma and her employers giving her work uniform, which were both buried with her. At the funeral, one of her friends spoke. "Jun-chan, welcome back. I have never dreamed that we would see you again in this way. You must have been in so much pain, so much suffering. The happy we all made for the school festival looked really good on you. We will never forget you. I have heard that the headmaster has presented you with a graduation certificate. So we graduated together. All of us. Jun-chan, there is no more pain, no more suffering. Please rest in peace." So, let's get into this. There's a lot to dissect here. First of all, it's fucking horrific what's happened to this poor girl. Along with the Sylvia Likens case, as we mentioned before, this one, when I was researching it, fucking made me feel physically sick and shocked me. I'm sure it has a lot of you who've just listened. I mean, I've been looking at Leslie's face because this is the first time he's heard of most of this. His face was that of disgust, shock and anger throughout it. And also looking puzzled of... Let's just start with it, right? First of all, the police. The two police who go to a house and don't follow procedure.
To play devil's advocate here, could that have been because of the Yakuza connections? Like, if they knew that that family was connected to the Yakuza, could even, they have thought that even not having if, anything to do with this?
Even if it was, right, the family have said, you can come in, have a look around. Even if there is Yakuza ties there and the police like, well, we're a bit wary. Like, no, there's no one here. Come and have a look around. They should still do that. You know, they literally kept a girl there for a further, 20-odd days because they didn't do their job properly.
Yeah.
It's really upsetting that when she finally got to the phone and called the police, she didn't manage to talk to anyone or anything.
Surely at that point as well, they should have maybe followed it up because it's like, I mean, could they, it was the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They'd have been able to trace the number back.
But no, they phoned them back and they just said, oh no, sorry, we dialed it by accident. I know that when I was at a mate's house, another friend picked his phone up, dialed 999 and put the phone down and they kept calling back and saying, what's your emergency? And we're like, oh no, sorry, there isn't one. And they were like, but they completely and utterly bollocked him.
Yeah.
And then put the phone down because they stay on the line even if you hang up or they will call. I mean, the police ineptitude there was completely and utterly disgusting.
Again, like I say, surely you'd follow it up because you'd be able to trace that call back and be like, it's from that house again.
They aren't going to trace a call, every call, are they?
No, that's a good
point. So they're not going to be like, oh yeah, we're going to trace this just in case. You know, if they heard a girl screaming or something, possibly. But yeah, we've got that. And then you got the parents who were just literally like, yeah, there's a girl being kept in our house. She's being raped. She's being beaten. So what?
It's all right.
I'm scared of my son.
Yeah. Keep the noise down.
I know they did give reparations to the... Well, they didn't give reparations. They lost a fucking civil case, you know. I think it was those who... They sold the house and gave the proceeds to the family from it. Obviously, you're not going to want to live in that house again. But, you know, they're to blame for this as well.
Well, it's enablement, isn't it?
You've got the Yakuza links there, but, you know, I've read a lot about the Mafia and things like that. If there was, in the Italian Mafia, you know, American Mafia, a girl who was kidnapped and being tortured by Mafia members for no good reason, they'd fucking put a stop to it straight away.
Well, that's the thing. I always thought that, like, in these organisations, and this is what shocks me, I mean, again, maybe it's just, maybe it's a cultural difference. But like, I mean, I don't know that much about the Yakuza or anything like that. But I know, again, like you, quite a bit about like the way the Italian mob works. And there's always seemed to me to be a strange code of honour there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you don't do anything unless it's been okayed in.
Yeah.
You know, if you kill somebody, you've got to have a good reason for it.
Yeah.
Whereas these guys just went around gang raping women.
Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be in like...
After World War II, where, you know, the Japanese army were disbanded and things, because the Japanese army, they had like sort of the, you know, the warrior spirit in them of, you know, you had the kamikaze pilots, you know, the warrior, the soldiers would run head on into battle. That sort of spirit got taken out of the country. Could it be a case of with Yakuza? Yakuza, it is just basically the warrior spirit of we can do what we want to kind of thing. Obviously, well, I just want to point this out. We're not saying all Japanese people, just to cover that base, but the fucking Yakuza.
Well, if we're looking back at that, like, sort of warrior code, you know, like the, what's it called, Bushido?
Bushido, yeah.
Bushido. Again, that comes with a lot of different, like, sort of moral values. I mean, I know for a fact that, like, with the, again, going back to the example of World War II, the reason that POWs were so badly treated by the Japanese is because culturally, due to Bushido, there was this belief, and it wasn't always done. There is historical precedence for this not always happening. If you were defeated in battle, it was an expectation that you'd commit seppukai and probably butchering that.
I always thought it was harikari.
I think it's called seppuki or seppukai or something.
Is that the harikari sword?
Yeah, like they stab themselves and their mother. They stab themselves in the stomach and then somebody beheads them.
Oh, that could be harikari. I always thought was you stab onto it and then you fall onto your sword.
Yeah.
So it kills you further.
Yeah.
Could be two separate things.
But like it was expected. It was an expectation that as a defeated, as somebody who's been defeated, you'd take your own life. And this was an expectation that carried through till World War II. I mean, I'm sure somebody who's into history and like Japan will tear me to shreds on that because, you know, I know fuck all really.
about anything really, about not just anything. Japan, just we know fuck all.
Just know fuck all.
We know true crime and obscure 80s TV shows and that's about it.
And horror and just being dicks in general.
I know a lot of obscure 90s grunge bands.
Yeah, yeah, they're good. They're good, he did me a playlist. But yeah, like... you know, that was an expectation that was carried over to, like, the Western prisoners of war. So they felt it was okay to mistreat them due to the fact that, like, you know, that cultural mentality of, well, we've got to look after you now.
Yeah.
Really, what you should have done is taken your own lives because you're defeated. And it's... I'm not going to attack that if that was their way. I mean, to us, it's abhorrent. I mean, God, even the Nazi Germans kind of treated POWs better, sort of. I mean, like military prisoners of war. I don't mean the Holocaust. But it's all happy with James Dean. With James Dean and the Great Escape. It's different.
James Dean, don't you mean Steve McQueen?
Steve McQueen. Who's James Dean?
James Dean was in Rebel Without a Cause. He died.
Steve McQueen. Yeah, he died in Little Bastard, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Do you know that car's missing? No one knows where that car is.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. Didn't they, like, take loads of parts off it and stuff? And then, like, all those other cars had crashes.
Yeah. And then they put it back together and then the car went missing. There's a Supernatural episode about it where he finds Little Bastard.
I like that.
And it's haunted.
But, yeah. And I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm sorry, it's been a long time in quarantine.
But yeah, so up there with Sylvia Likens with possibly being the most horrific case of torture.
This one's worse.
There was a big thing in our comments on one of the videos of, I think it was on a video or it could have been on Facebook. I'm not sure, but somebody put, oh, Junko Furuta is way worse. And someone was like, it's not a competition.
It's no.
Like, everything that happened was fucking terrible, you know.
I just think objectively it's worse. It's like with the Lycans case, a lot of the participants were kids.
These were kids,
yeah. But my point is weren't they younger? Weren't the Sylvia Lycan kids young, like those ones younger?
They were neighbourhood kids though, who were getting around and being charged. But you know, you had Gertrude, you had Stephanie, the family, you had Richard Hobbs, the other guy, you had a boyfriend.
Yeah.
There were adults in it as well. And, you know, and if the kids are like, oh, I'm 17, you're a fucking adult, really.
Yeah, you are.
You should know. Yeah, there was little kids coming in and doing it. But I think, for me, they're both abhorrent and they're both up there as being absolutely fucking disgusting. It's up to you. Guys, what do you think? Obviously, it's a disturbing case. I hope you agree that we try to do it respectfully as much as we can. We do like to bring you all the details that we can. We don't want to skimp on the details for you. As I always say, we're not doing this to disrespect anybody or anybody who knows the families or anything like that. We are doing it just as historical reference points and also from an interest point of view of human nature and true crimes.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's why you guys are here as well. It's an interesting subject. It's a taboo subject, but we have to do it somehow. But guys, please let us know what you think. Hit us up on Twitter and on Facebook, also on Instagram. The email for us is enterthedarkpodcast@gmail.com. Please email us with suggestions for episodes, what you think of the episodes, any questions you've got for us. And yeah, we will be back with another case soon for you. So as ever, I'm Jan. This is Les. Thank you for listening and take care.
Bye.